Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Lamed. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 18 lines from the top. It's about halfway down the narrow section of the Gemara. You'll notice a dibor maser with a two dots, hanoder min hamozon muter b'mayim uvemelach. The Mishnah mentioned that one who takes a vow not to benefit from something called mozon, very loosely translated, food, and we'll see more detailed definitions as we go on in the Gemara, but what is not included in the halachic term mozon, and as we've mentioned before in Gemara Markings, we don't like to translate things that are basically halachic concepts. So we are going to focus in our upcoming discussion on the concept of or the category of that which is mozon. Whatever the case is, the Mishnah already establishes that water and salt are not included in the realm of mozon, because one who vows not to benefit from mozon is still allowed to benefit from water and salt. On the side of our Gemara, we have the Nosei, the topic heading is Ma Nechshav Mozon. And there's another expression we'll see in the Gemara, zon. What is categorized as mozon? What is under the category of that which is zon? Nafkamina legabi nedorim. There will be a practical difference in terms of these categories in the realm of vow taking. In other words, if one vows not to benefit from that which is mozon, what will he still be allowed to benefit from? And likewise, if he vows not to benefit from that which is zon, what will he still be allowed to benefit from? As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice a geometric form. We call this the volcano or the trapezoid. Under the Mivneh heading, you can see this is referred to as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take. Hence, we have these forms reversed position as the Gemara goes on, with the narrow part facing up. They represent kushos, questions, and when inverted, they represent tshuvos, answers. Now that form has been explained, there's one more marking that we will encounter, and that's the term. It's a marking with a double underline where we will highlight the word mozon and mizonos to help focus on the issue at hand. So now the Gemara. We open with a long question. The long question marking is quite prominent. You can see it there. So now the Gemara. After the Mishnah establishes that a neder to refrain from benefit from mozon allows one to benefit from water and salt, well, is that all? The Gemara asks, Melach umayim hu dolo ikri mozon hol kol mili ikri mozon. Is it so that only salt and water are not called mozon, but all other food items are called mozon? Well, if that be the case, lema teve tufto de Rav Shmuel, then this Mishnah would represent a repudiation of the opinion of Rav and Shmuel. The Rav Shmuel, the Amitra Vayu, they both say, ein mevorchin borei minei mazonos elo al chameshis haminim bilvad. You notice the word mazonos is marked the same way as we noted the word mozon. So these are interchangeable expressions. The bracha of borei minei mazonos is recited over only the five types of grain that include wheat and barley, rye, oats, and spelt. Those are the five types of grain. That's it. That's what's categorized as mazonos. But everything else, all kinds of vegetables and fruits and meat and potatoes and eggs and whatever, they are all considered non-mazonos. Yet our Mishnah says everything is considered mazon except for salt and water. So this Mishnah would seem to repudiate Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara says, okay, maybe, but velo osivine chadozimno, have we not already repudiated their opinion? And one can see that in Maseches Brochos, how the Gemara raised an objection to Rav and Shmuel already. So they've already been objected to. The Gemara comes back and continues the question and says, well, Lemo Teheve Tuftayu Nami Meho. Why not say that this Mishnah here in Erevin is also a repudiation, an additional repudiation of their opinion? Well, why not say that? So the Gemara says, regarding our Mishnah, not so. Omar Rav Huna. Our Mishnah, which speaks about a vow, and we find everything is forbidden except for Maimu Melach, salt and water, our Mishnah is really talking about something else. That's what Rav Huna answers, Be'oimer kol hazon olai. Notice the word zon is it might have the same root as the word mezonos, but it's a different term. That when you say hazon, that includes all food substances except for salt and water. But as far as mezonos and our Mishnah, it might very well be that it's like Rav and Shmuel, that mezonos is limited to the five types of grain, what we call here the chameshes haminim. The Gemara asks a question, again a long question, Mayim umelachu deloi zaini ha kol mili zaini. Are you suggesting now that it's only mayim and melach that are not zaini? Now, as far as what the word zaini actually means, so it would have to do with something that is of, let's say, as Rashi points out, kol hazon is mashma kol dover hamasbia, anything that creates satisfaction. So if you say that mayim and melach are not zaini, but everything else is zaini, is that really so? The Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chana, the Gemara goes on and asks, but didn't Rabo Bar Chana say ki have azni azilno basrei de Rabbi Yochanan lemeichal pir de Genosa, when I followed Rabbi Yochanan to eat the fruits of Genosar? Genosar is a place near the Yam Kineret, the Lake of Tiberias, and the fruits there are exceptionally sweet. So I was once following Rabbi Yochanan to eat those fruits. When we were a group of 100, that's Beimeo, the Mankitinon, each one of us gathered 10 fruits. Kiavino Beasora, when we were a group of 10, Ave Mankitinon, Lucholchad Vechad Meomeo, each one of us gathered 100 fruits. So sum total is 1,000 fruits. Vecholmeo Minayu, Ave Machsiklu Tsona Bas Flosasovi, and every 100 of them, 100 of these fruits, would fill a tzona, a basket, a receptacle, that was 3 sa'ah. So if there were 1,000, there were 30 sa'ah, would be basically a kor in amount. That's a very, very large amount for a person to eat. And Rabbi Yochanan would eat all of them, and the Omar, and he would then declare, Shvu'asa delotoyim li ziyuna. He would take a vow, I haven't tasted any ziyuna. Ziyuna is equivalent to the word zon, as we saw. So what do we see from here? That not only mayim and melach are not zon, but all these fruits are as well not zon. Hence our question. The Gemara answers, Emo mezoina. No, what Rabbi Yochanan said is that I didn't taste any mazona, like the word mazon we saw before, and as we said before, the word mazon doesn't include fruits, so hence what he said is accurate. But the word zon is quite inclusive, with the exception being mayim umelach. So, just to summarize the gist of this Gemara is that, as far as the opinion of Rav and Shmuel regarding the bracha of Borei Minei Mezonos is recited only the Chamesh Saminim, so this Mishnah with Hanodir Min HaMazon is essentially, it's really Nodir Min HaZon. Even though the text reads Mazon, we should understand it as one who vowed not to benefit from Zon. That is what's almost all inclusive except for Mayim Umelach. We continue in the Gemara. We have a topic heading on the side, and we have written there, Dino say, Dino shel Rav Huna, Be'inyan, regarding Kikor, Shenodar, Olov, a loaf of bread, we'll say, a loaf of something baked, that a person had vowed the vowed not to benefit from, and we want to know, we want to evaluate in our Gemara the ability l'shamesh ke'eruv. Can a loaf over which one had vowed not to benefit from, can it serve as an eruv? And we'll talk, for example, about an eruv tchumen, where a person wants to extend his his allowed walking distance on Shabbos. We know that a person has 2,000 amos from wherever he is on Shabbos. As Shabbos sets in, if he wants to, let us say, walk up to 4,000 amos in one particular direction, so he would place some bread or some food down at the end of 2,000 amos from where he is located, and then that becomes his new Shabbos location, and can walk from that loaf of bread another 2,000 amos. So our question is, what about using a loaf of bread that one had vowed concerning it? So we'll see 2 points. Shvua shelo ochal kikor zu, mutar la'arev bo. If a person vowed that I'm not going to benefit from this particular loaf, so it's mutar for him to make an eruv out of it. However, if a person says kikor zu olai, then osir. So the expressions here in the vow making are different, and as a result of the difference, there is this practical legal difference that follows. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna, Shvua shelo ochal kikor zu, ma'arvin loy bo. One can use it for an eruv. And Rashi explains, ma'arvin lo bo. Rashi, you could see almost across from here, one or two lines up. He says, delo nodar melchila. This person vowed simply not to eat from it. V'imishum delo chazile. If you'll argue, well, it's not fit for him, so how can you use an eruv? How can you make an eruv out of something that's not fit for you? Ha chazile achrini. True, you can't eat from it, but you can give it to someone else to eat from. Mididavi on Nazir Biyan, just like using wine for an Eruv for a Nazir. The Nazir himself can't benefit from the wine, but it's something that someone else can benefit from. So that's as far as the expression, Shvua shelo ochal kikor zu. Another expression, kikor zu olai, that literally, that this loaf is upon me as forbidden. Rashi explains, Mashma kol dvar hanosa kosar ale. Any dvar hano, any benefit that the loaf could provide for him. So, what is the Gemara rule? Ein ma'arvin lo ba. You cannot use it as an eruv because the eruv does provide a benefit for the one that set it up. And here he vowed not to derive any benefit, not like the lashon just before, not to merely eat, but not to benefit. So that will make it such that he cannot use the loaf as an eruv. This is Rav Huna's din. Now, we see in the Gemara a new marking, the triangle, and under our Mivneh heading, you will notice that we have a type of a ma'akav marking, mainly, again, like we saw before, to keep track of the give and take. So with the point of the triangle facing upwards, that's neged Rav Huna. It represents a problem for Rav Huna. With the triangle inverted, l'toivas Rav Huna, it will serve to benefit Rav Huna in the discussion. And as you can see, the triangles continue over the next few lines. The Gemara, Meisvei. We now challenge Rav Huna. Hanoder min hakikor ma'arvin loba. One who took a vow concerning a loaf, it can be used as an eruv. My lav, the Omar Olai. Is it not so that he said kikor zu olai, and yet we see he is still allowed to use it? And so what we would then conclude that kikor zu olai really means that a person is vowing not to acquire or receive the primary benefit, which is eating from it, but other benefits he could have. Therefore, he can use it as an eruv. Loi. That's not the case of the Mishnah cited. Omar zu. He had said, Shvua shelo ochal kikor zu. Okay, so if it's just a matter of eating that you're forswearing, you can use it for an eruv. Hachinami mestabro. In fact, this is most likely. De katoni seifa. The seifa, the end of the same source, says, Amosai bisman shomar shvua shelo etameno. When is it suitable for making an eruv? Where he's vowed not to eat from it. Notice etameno is to taste from it. Avol. Now we lead into a question. Avol omar olai mai. What would be the din according to our approach? If he said kikrazu olai, hochi nami de'ein ma'arvin lobo, are you then saying like Rav Huna that he would not be able to use it as an eruv? Hochi. If that's the case that olai is ein ma'arvin adetoni, instead of teaching a case of ein ma'arvin, there is a case kikrazu hektish ein ma'arvin lobo. There is such a source. That's what the source says. If you proclaim the kikar to be hektish, sanctified, then you don't make an error from it, because you don't use that which is sanctified for your own personal needs. So why go to the realm of hektish, to the realm of sanctification, when you can stay in the realm of the domain, the common, the mundane, stay in the realm of the chulin, the mundane? Liflog velisni bedida, make a distinction. If Rav Huna is correct, so the Mishnah could have made its distinction as follows: Bamed v'amamurim di Omar zu. When is it such that you can make an eruv out of the kikor? And even though you vowed, that's where you said kikor zu, namely. The Gemara is a bit terse, but it's where he vowed not to eat from it. Avol Omar Olai. If he said Kikor Zu Olai, Ein Ma'arvin Lo Bo. So why did the Mishnah not use this as a distinction? So our point is, from the fact that the Mishnah, in order to find a case of Eruv prohibition, had to go into another realm, the realm of sanctification of Hekdish, therefore within the realm of Chulin, even where you say Olai, you could still use it as an Eruv. That is a kasha on Rav Huna. Omar loch Rav Huna. Rav Huna will respond, El Omai. Kol heichod yomar Olai ma'arvin. Well, if that's the case, are you telling me, answers Rav Huna, that wherever you say Olai, you are allowed to use it as an Eruv? Well then, Kasha Reisha. What are you going to say about the Reisha? We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. On that line, we had answered above that only if you say Zu is it allowed. But if you say Olai, we said Hochinami Mistabra. We pointed out at that point that when you say Olai, it would in fact be Osir. That's what we derived from the way we learned the Reisha earlier. So what is Rav Huna saying? Rav Huna says, I hear your objection to me from the case of Kikrazu Hekdish as being the only case of prohibition, but what about the Reisha of our Mishnah cited earlier, where if you say Olai, the result is it would be allowed, like I say. So that's Rav Huna's argument for his benefit. That's why the most recent triangle was an inverted triangle. And now the Gemara responds to knock out, we'll say, the support Rav Huna was trying to seek. Chisure mechaser v'hochi katoni. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, the objection that was raised from the case of Hekdish, we will maintain that objection. And hence Rav Huna will be in trouble, as follows. Chisuri mechaser v'ochikotoni, hanoder min hakikor. Notice what we're doing is we're rereading the source at the first wide line, hanoder, which we thought would be a support to Rav Huna, and we're going to show now that it's not. Hanoder min hakikor, ma'arvin lo ba, one who made a vow concerning a loaf, you can use it for an eruv afilu omar olai, even if you said olai, it's still useful. Naase ko'imer shvua shelo etameno. It's as if he said, shvua, that I'm not going to eat from it. And as we said before, a shvua like that still leaves open the possibility of using it for an eruv. But what did we note here? We dashed underline afilu omar olai. You can still use it for an eruv. That's not like Rav Huna. Mikol mokom kashi l'Rav Huna. This now, Mikol Mokom means, nevertheless, there remains a question of Huna. What the Gemara is alluding to is as far as what you thought might have been a problem in the Tanaic sources, that is no problem. That we resolved just now. But if you take the sum total of all these Tanaic sources that we've been quoting along the way, we're now still left with a problem for Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna said Olai would be a result in Eruv Prohib restriction, and here we see no. The Gemara responds, and notice the inverted triangle. Who the Amak, Rabbi Elezer? Well, Rav Huna has a Tanaic authority. Rav Huna being an Amora, he needs a Tanaic authority to base himself on. He has Rabbi Elezer. And now the source that contains Rabbi Elezer, Desanya, Rabbi Elezer Omer, Shvu Shilo Ochal Kikar Zu Marvin Lo Ba, Kikar Zu Olai Ein Ma'arvin Lo Ba. Notice we dashed on the line. Simply what we have to focus on is the word Olai results in an Eruv restriction. However, we're not out of the forest. We come out with a question. The most recent point would have been comfortable for Rav Huna insofar as we have Rabbi Eliezer that supports Rav Huna's approach. But the Gemara brings that into question. Umi Omar Rabbi Eliezer Hochi. Would Rabbi Eliezer really have said thusly? Va'atanya. And a Tanaic source follows. We have there's two parts. Odom Oser Atzmo Bochel Ma'arvin Lo Ba. If a person forbade himself in food, it can still be used as an eruv. And if we look at Rashi, Odom Oser Atzmo Bochel Shetola Haneder B'Maisa Shehu Oser Be'Atzmoi Dahainu Shelo Ochal. If a person vowed concerning an action that he himself would do, for example, not to eat, he vowed not to eat, the food item can still be used as an eruv. Second example of this source, ochal or ochel hanesar lo adam, food that has been forbidden to a person, ein marvin lo ba. It cannot be used as an eruv. Rashi explains on this, ochal nesar al adam kagon, kikar zu te'oser olai. Rashi, we're reading on the first wide line under the Gemara. The person had made the following vow, kikar zu te'oser olai, oishvu ashlo ehene mi kikar zu. These are types of vows that are understood by the expression, ochal hane'esar al adam, a food item that has been forbidden upon a person. Here the prohibition is not a function of some action you will do. Even some kind of benefit that's not a result of your action. You're not allowed to benefit, and hence you can't use it as an eruv. That's as far as the Tanna Kamma is concerned. Truth be told, that's less significant for our current discussion. We become more interested here because here we're focusing on Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kikar Zu Olai Ma'arvin Lo Ba. And notice how we dashed underline that. Rabbi Eliezer says that the expression of Kikar Zu Olai does not restrict the use of the bread for an Eruv. And that's not like Rav Huna. Kikar Zu Hegdish Ein Ma'arvin Lo Ba, Lefishein Ma'arvin Lo Be'Hekdeshus. If one proclaimed the loaf to be sanctified, so then, and only then, it cannot be used as an Eruv. So what we thought would be a Tanaic source on which to base Rav Huna, and namely Rebbe Eliezer, well, here we have it black on white, unlike what Rav Huna said. Now, just for a moment, you compare what we dashed underlined here after Rebbe Eliezer's name, Kikar Zu Olai Ma'arvin, but we had a source just before with Rebbe Eliezer's name featured, and it said Kikar Zu Olai Ein Ma'arvin Lo Ba. That was like Rav Huna. The Gemara answers, and the inverted triangle once again indicates a salvation for Rav Huna. Tre Tanoi Valibo de Rebbe Eliezer. There are two later Tanaic opinions as to what the earlier Tana Rebbe Eliezer had said. But as long as we have some Tanaic basis for Rav Huna's opinions, Rav Huna is okay. The Gemara continues. Ma'arvin Lenozir B'yayin. Masnisen Delo Kibei Shamai. The Gemara establishes that our Mishnah is not like Beis Shammai. As we will see very shortly, and it'll be quite apparent, the Sanya. Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Ma'arvin L'nozer b'yayin u'sra b'truma. Here we see black on white that you cannot use wine as an eruv for a nozer. A nozer, of course, is someone who vowed not to benefit from wine. And a Yisrael, a non-kohen, cannot have an eruv made for him from truma. Yet our Mishnah said it could be. Beitil omrim me'arvin l'nozer b'yayin u'Yisrael b'truma. And Beis Hillel says that, like our Mishnah, that you can use wine as an eruv for a nozir, and truma, which is only Kohanim are allowed to eat, but you can use truma food as the eruv for a Yisrael, who is someone not allowed to eat truma. Amru lohen Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So Beis Hillel addresses Beis Shammai and says, I atem moidim, do you not agree or concede Shema Arvin? We're at the top of Omid Beis. Shema Arvin legodol b'yoyim hakipurim. That an Eruv, which allows a person, as we've seen before, to go beyond his locale an additional 2,000 amas. So let's say on Yom Kippur a person needs to walk in a particular direction outside of his city, an additional, up to 2,000 additional amos outside his city, an Eruv can be made for an adult. And of course you use food, but it's Yom Kippur, it's something he cannot eat. So the fact that someone cannot eat from it doesn't restrict an Eruv from being made. Omru lohen avol. Beis Shammai says, avol means yes. We agree that you can make an Eruv for a godel, for an adult, on Yom Kippur, out of food. Omru lohen. So Beis Hillel responds, Kishem shem arvin l'godel b'yom ha-kippurim. Just like an Eruv can be made for an adult on Yom Kippur, came arvin l'nozir b'yayin l'Yisrael b'truma. By the same token, these we'll call them non-edibles, are still allowed to be used for these respective individuals. Just like food, vis-a-vis Yom Kippur, we would call a non-edible. Beis Shammai. What's Beis Shammai's response? Because they do make a distinction. It's as follows. Hosam, in the case of Yom Kippur, ikos se'uda hura'uya miba'od yom. That means that the Eruv, which is placed wherever you want it to be placed, it's placed before the onset of the holy day, whether it be Shabbos. In this case, it's placed before Yom Kippur. When the Eruv is placed down, it was something that at that point in time could have been eaten, making it a good Eruv. Ocha, in the case of the Nozir, it's not something, the Nozir, the wine is something that, being that he is a Nozir, he could not have eaten from it even before Yom Kippur or before Shabbos. Hence, Beis Shammai argues that wine for Nozir or Truma for a Yisrael is not suitable for an Eruv, because it's not a Suda Ruya Miba'od Yom. Keman, our Mishnah that indicates that Beis Shammai is Mode in the case of Eruv, is Delo Kechananya. In other words, we see from our Mishnah that only as far as Yayin for a Nozir and Truma for a Yisrael, so an Eruv cannot be made. But in general, he is Modeh, he concedes that there is something called placing food down, in general, regular food for regular people, as an Eruv. And you don't need to do any more than that. Well, that approach that Beis Shammai basically agrees to the general concept of an Eruv is not like Chananya, Desanya, Chananya Oimer. Ko'atzmon shel Beis Shammai lo hoyu moidim be'eruv. Beis Shammai doesn't agree with this idea of establishing a new Shabbos location by placing food at a particular distance from where you are. Ash yotzi mitoso v'chol klei tashmisho l'shom, until how can a person change his location? By literally bringing all of his wares to that particular spot, that they should be there before Shabbos, be there for Shabbos, his bed and all of his other articles. So our Mishnah, which suggests that in general Beis Shammai does concede to the placing of food, just with regard to the Nozir and the Yisrael, there were the restrictions. is not like Hanania's approach, which says that this whole food approach is not something Beis Shammai accepts. Kiman az laha desanya. We have a Tanaic source, and we're asking which Tana would be the basis of this. In Rav Bishorin, lo yetzi b'levonav, a person made an eruv. He set down, let's say, food while wearing black clothing. So he went to the location that he wanted to be for Shabbos while wearing shorin, black clothing. Well, on Shabbos, he cannot go beyond his tum, lo yetzi b'levonim. He cannot go wearing white clothing. B'levonim, lo yetzi b'shorin. Likewise, the opposite as well. Keman, who would say such a thing, that you can't go beyond the tum with anything other than that which was there at the beginning of Shabbos? Omar Rav Nachman, this is the first, we'll call it the approach. Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Hanan Yohi V'Aliva DeBeis Shammai. This source is according to Hananya and his version of Beis Shammai, where we saw that you were highly restricted. The Gemara asks, Ulechananya, according to Hananya, who said, Lo Yetze B'Shorim, in other words, if he made an Erev B'Levonim, Lo Yetze B'Shorim, are we saying, B'Shorim Huda Lo Yetze Ha B'Levonim Yetze, that the only restriction is not to wear the black clothing, but the white clothing he can wear? But Hananya said that it's not an Erev until he brings out all of his wares to that place. In other words, there's no room for symbolism. You've got to bring, an Erev is not going to be an Erev by placing anything there other than all of your wares, by literally relocating to that spot outside the city from which you want to extend your 2,000 amos. Mora answers, Hochi Ka'omar, Erev B'Levonim, V'Hutzrich L'Shchorim. If a person made an Eruv while wearing white clothing, and on Shabbos he needs to wear black clothing, Af B'Levonim Lo Yetze, even with white clothing, he cannot go beyond his basic 2,000 amos, because his Eruv is ineffective. Keman, well, who would say that this is ineffective? Because what was just described over here? What was described was someone placed food down while wearing a particular color of clothing. But that's ineffective. Well, who would say that? Omer Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Hananya hi v'aliba d'Beis Shammai. That is what Hananya said. That an Eruv is not an Eruv unless you literally relocate by placing all of your wares at that point beyond the city to reestablish your Shabbos location. We look at the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei, a topic heading, and we read as follows: Ta'am l'sumchus she'oisir l'Yisrael l'arev b'truma matir l'nozir l'arev b'yayin. We're going to see an analysis of sumchus. His approach is that an eruv, when it comes to the issue of truma, a Yisrael cannot have an eruv made of truma, but a nazir can have an eruv made of wine. Why? The difference. The Gemara. We had seen in the Mishnah the Yisrael b'truma, an eruv can be made for Yisrael for truma. Sumchus omer b'chulin. Sumchus says no, for Yisrael only chulin. V'ilu l'nazir b'ayin lo polig. But as far as the issue of using wine for nozer, which the Tanakama allowed, Sumchus doesn't disagree. In other words, Sumchus will matir the nozer making an eruv using wine. My taima, why is that? Answer: Efsher de Mitchell on Nezirusay. It's possible for him to be shoyal on the Nezirus. The Nezirus is a type of vow. And as many of you may be aware, vows can be absolved. That's called lishoil or shoyel, to ask on it literally. It means to seek its absolution. So since the vow can be absolved, it's there's no problem using wine for the nazir. The Gemara asks, Ihachi. Well, if that's the case, Truma nami efshir de mitchil olei. Truma, also when you tithe, when you set aside some food, declaring it as truma, that can be reversed as well through she'ela, and the food then will not be truma anymore. And yet, Sumchus is strict with regard to the use of truma. The Gemara responds, I'll tell you why Sumchus is strict with regard to truma. E mitchil Allah hadro letivla. If he is shoyel on it, it remains forbidden because it becomes tevel. Tevel is that which is untithed. Once again, if he set aside some food substance as truma, that's the tithe. But if he then reverses it, so the food substance remains prohibited. There's no potential, so to speak. Either it's truma or it's tevel. Either one is not something that is fit to eat. And hence, Sumchus objects to the use of truma for a Yisrael. The Gemara asks, V'lifro shalob mimokom acher. Why do you say that it becomes tevel? Could he not tithe what is in front of him, that which is untithed? He can tithe from another spot, other food, and even though it's not right here, it's somewhere else, but that mokom acher will then exempt this from being tevel. So the question remains, why does Sumchus express his restriction with regard to using truma as a tithe for a Yisrael? Even if he, in the event that he, let's say, he reverses the truma status, it doesn't mean that that food is going to become forbidden, being reverting to tevel, because he has the option of tithing from another location. If we look at Rashi, v'lifru shalem mimokom acher, there's a bracket, so we skip it for a moment. Let him mafrish from another point, another spot of food, bein hashmoshos, right before the onset of Shabbos, b'shas knias eruv, motzi lemeimar, when the eruv time sets in, when it's activated, at that moment, the moment before it gets activated, you say, Peros sheishli bebeisiu truma alzu, the fruit that I have in my house shall be the tithe for this. The result being that there is a solution for the food that he originally had set aside as truma, so it can, in potential, serve as something that the Yisrael can eat. So why is Sumchus restrictive? The Gemara answers that this solution is not a solution because lo nechshedu yish chaverim litrom shalom in amukov. Chaverim is an expression of the plural form of chover. Chover is someone who is diligent in his fulfillment of the mitzvah, the commandment of tithing. So people who are chaverim are diligent and will not tithe unless the food items are mukaf, together. They are in the, like, imagine in the same basket. They have to be next to each other. The Gemara asks, V'lifrosh Allah mineube, if that's the case, so tithe from the food itself. Answer, the less bal shiura. In other words, he set aside as truma the food, an amount of food, which is, we call mozon shtei sudos, exactly, the amount of two meals worth of food, exactly. If he tithes minei ubei, fulfilling the mukaf requirement, if he tithes from that food itself, there won't be enough food left to serve as the eruv. The Gemara asks, umai pascha, how are you so sure, how is it so certain that the case of the Sumchus is speaking about only that situation? In other words, if that's the case that someone's talking about where it's exactly two meals, it's kind of contrived. So hence the Gemara asks, how can you give such an answer? So the last question then would remain of, why not be mafush minei ubei? So the question being, why the Sumbas object to Truma for a Yisrael as an Eruv? Ela Sumbas that asers Yisrael b'Truma is Sovel k'Rabbonan, the Amri, they hold like the Rabbonan. Namely, Kol Dover Shu Mishum Shvus Gozru Olav Bein Hashmoshes. Anything that is prohibited on a rabbinic level, any rabbinic level prohibition, that prohibition is in power at Bein Hashmoshes. Bein Hashmoshes is the time where Shabbos sets in and the Eruv takes effect. Now, how does that answer our question? Well, the most recent question we had was, why does Truma represent a problem? Could he not be mafrish from the Truma itself, tithing after he was shoyal on the Truma, after he reversed the Truma status of the food that he set aside? True, it becomes Tevel, but could he not then, Tevel being untithed, something forbidden, which is of concern to Sumchus, but could he not have still been mafrish minei ubei? So the final answer is what we just said in the Gemara, was that Sukkos holds like the Rabbanan, the things that are rabbinically restricted are restricted already from Bein HaShemoshes, but this needs explanation. So let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi across from here says, Gozru lo Bein HaShemoshes, kibishabes atzmo. Bein HaShemoshes is the, we'll call it the twilight period. It's a period where it's not clear whether it's still the day before, whether it's Friday or it's already Shabbos. So the rabbis imposed their rabbinic restrictions, just like on Shabbos there are malachas that are asuros, even things that are also midirabbonon, rabbinically also are also restricted at the Bein HaShemoshes period. Vagbos Truma, the idea of tithing, Shvus Hi, that's a rabbinic prohibition. There's a it's a forbidden to tithe because it's reminiscent of fixing something. Misakein is a problem of a makibet patish. Vagboz truma we said is shvusi v'kevedem ikora lo tikna, and since originally he didn't fix it, he set it aside as truma. Boy slamei boy havi chozilahu shaita demishalo komokum shiva hodru l'tivla, and you suggested that. Since at the onset of Shabbos he could have undone the Truma status and then it would at that point revert to Tevel. And then you declare that within the Truma, the northern part of the food item that you had set aside as the Eruv, the Truma Eruv, you declare the northern part its tithe. That's Truma Sot, Betzofen Shebo, Maiserishon Betroma, V'chein Kulam. That's a method, the called verbal method of tithing is a reality. Im kein misakin lebein hashmoshes. Well, if that be the case, then you're doing the preparation, the fixing of it at bein hashmoshes for kol v'ashvus, and that's a shvus is a rabbinic violation. Oknias eruv kishezeh nichnas v'zeh yotzei, and eruv sets in, eruv takes effect when Shabbos enters and the weekday, and namely Friday, exits. So this most recent suggestion of Lifra Shalemine Ubei is not tenable, because that would be taking place, as Rashi described, at Bein HaShemoshes, and one is not allowed to do that at Bein HaShemoshes. Kiman Azla Ha Disnan, like whom would the following source go? So we have to read a Tanaic source. After the frame section, you can see the Gemara repeats the question, Keman, and we will then see the answer. So we read a source. Yesh she'omru hakol lefi mashu adam. There are those that say that different areas of halacha are established according to the individual in question. We'll call it customized or personalized. Malo kumtso mincha. And mincha is a meal offering that is offered as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. When a meal offering is brought, in most cases a handful of the flour is scooped up by the Kohen and put on the altar and burnt. When we speak about a handful, it's called a kometz. Is a kometz a standard size or be dependent on the personal size of the Kohen. So the source says that when we speak about a kometz, the kometz is a personal, according to size, a personal size, according to the Kohen that is offering it. Likewise, umelo chafon of k'toris. That's the same idea with regard to the incense offering, where two hands full are taken, but it's if you're a large man, so you'll have a large amount of incense in the hands full. If it's a small individual with small hands, it'll, of course, be a smaller amount of k'toris. Vashosim lo lugmov biyom hakipurim. The prohibition of drinking on Yom Kippur is established by a quantity known as Malo Lugmov, called his cheek full. So that too, it's the cheek full of the person that's drinking, as opposed to, let us say, when it comes to eating on Yom Kippur, there we find there's an objective amount, not a personalized amount, and it's called a kisevis, the amount of a date size of solid food. But when it comes to drinking, it's your cheek full. Uvemazon shtei sudos le'eruv, the amount of food for your two meals on Shabbos. So that when it comes to Eruv, which is what we are concerned with in our discussion, it's something that is of a personal nature, something that has to be fit for you. So who would say that? Once again, what we want to emphasize is hakol lefi ma shehu odom. We're emphasizing that's the idea of personalized, and we dashed underline le'eruv. So the concept of something of a personal use or satisfaction is what's necessary when making an eruv. So come on, which Tana would say that? After all, in this source there's no name. Amar Abizera sumchus he. This source is in accordance with sumchus. The Amar Mai dechazi lei bo'inan. That which is fit for the one making the eruv is that which is required. Just like we saw before, that you could not use for a Yisrael, you could not use truma. Lema pliga ada Rabbi Eliezer ada Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Should we say that this is at odds, we'll say, with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Elazar? Disanya, and here we're going to have a source in which Rabbi Shimon Elazar appears, and you'll notice we have a dashed underline at the end of this short source saying Besuda beinanis shel kol adam. This has to do with an eruv. When it comes to making an eruv, it's established in an objective form. Even though we're talking about someone who eats a large quantity of food, no, not necessary. The standard amount. So it's not personalized. So the source we saw just before then would be pliga, would be at odds with the approach of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Should we say that? So let's read this now in the Gemara. Let's start again with the question. Lema pliga the Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Should we say the source we saw just before, the Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam source, where Eruv was, the quantity for Eruv was personalized, is unlike Rav Shimon Elazar. Desanya Rav Shimon Elazar Oimer Me'arvin, two cases. Aleph L'chole L'zokein K'dei Mezono, for an infirmed individual or an elderly person who eat much less, the amount of food is the amount he eats on a personal level. Ulorafton, when you're dealing with a ravenous individual person who eats, let's say, large quantities of food, Besudabainin is Shokol Adam, the average amount that people eat in the course of two meals. So according to this source, which is Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Eruv is not something that's strictly personalized. The source before indicated that an Eruv is something that is based on a personal quantity. The Gemara responds and says that what we thought is unlike Rav Shimon Elazar could very well be like Rav Shimon Elazar. In other words, what if we think was unlike Rav Shimon Elazar, the source of Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam, where we saw that the eruv was personalized? So the Gemara explains, Tirguma, explain that source of Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam is Achole V'Zokein. With regard to an infirmed or elderly individual, Reb Shimon ben Elazar says, in fact, it's according to what he, the old person, eats, or the amount, the small amount that the chole would eat, two meals worth of his quantity, personalized. Avol Ravson, when it comes to someone ravenous, then Botlo Daito Eitzel Kol Adam, his mindset is is void relative to the mindset of all people, and therefore you don't need to have a large quantity of food for his two meals. So as far as the issue in the last section of Gemara is that we don't see any Tanaic controversy here, and that the source above that said Yeshomla called a Fimashu Adam when it comes to an Eruv, that's talking about the Eruv for an old or infirmed individual. But when it comes to someone who was ravenous, that wasn't the topic of the source. And Reb Shimon Malozer's own opinion is that when it comes to a Rav son, notice the similarity in the word Rav son and ravenous, when it comes to people like that, then you use the standard two-meal quantity. As we go on in the Gemara, we will be dealing with the issue of Kehanim and Tumas Mace and the making of an Eruv. The Gemara says, Ulekoin bebeis hapras, an Eruv can be placed down for a coin in a beis hapras. A beis hapras is an area of, we will call, Sofek Tumas Mace. There a doubt concerning the possibility of Tumas Mace. This is a field in which there had been a grave, and the field was plowed up, leaving bone fragments all over the place. And bone fragments, if they are the size of a barley grain, will impart tumas mace, defilement of the dead, to a kohen. And a kohen naturally is someone who is prohibited from encountering, we'll say, corpse defilement. So the Mishnah said that an eruv can be placed down for a kohen in a beis hapras. But, well, once again, you'll ask, but how can the Kohen gain access to his Eruv? And for an Eruv to be effective, it has to be something that the owner of it has access to it. The Gemara explains, the Omer of Yud Omer Shmuel, Menapech Odom Beis HaPras V'Holech. The example that's cited is a person that has to go to do a Korban Pesach. He can cut through a field in which a grave had been plowed up by using, menapech means to blow his way through. Blow, literally, to use a type of bellows, an air device, which the air jet will will scatter any bone material that might be there, will scatter it so that he doesn't encounter it, doesn't step on it. And cut through the beis hapras. So there is a possibility, we'll say, the potential for cutting through a beis hapras exists. Rashi says on the side, Rashi says, Menapech odom beis hapras, sode shenechosh bo kever, dekula sveiko mishumat somosi, the field in which a grave had been plowed up, the blades of the plow cutting through whatever remains of the deceased are there, scattering those remains, the bones, the atzamos below boser in a matama oil, there's no overshadowing tuma, ukshmapech b'fnei raglov, and when he uses the air jet in front of his path, im yesh shometzim godol near me'elov, if there's a large bone that wouldn't be blown away by the gust of air, so he will at least see it and not come into contact with it. Ve'etzim koton nira b'neficha v'eino masito baraglov, and the small bone will be let's read this Rashi a little more clearly, a little more accurately. A large bone, you don't even need to use the neficha process. That's seen on its own. You'll see a large bone. It's the small bone that would be revealed through the blowing process, and you'll see it and not step on it. It could be that our explanation is based on sources elsewhere that small bones would actually be cast away. But whichever explanation you use, the problem of the bones is solved by this menapeach process. Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami, Mishmei Rav Yehuda, Omar, Beis HaPras, Sheni Dash, Tahor. A Beis HaPras that has been trampled by people, that's been walked over, it's a, let's say it's a field, but lots of people have already trampled it, that is tohor. You don't need to do anything further because any bones that may have been there have been crushed and they won't remain even something a barley grain in size. So as far as the making of an eruv, the placing of eruv for a kohen beis hapras, there is the solution of the kohen having access to the eruv, which is what we are seeking. As we continue in the Gemara, we continue in the realm of Tumas Meis. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we indicate that this topic lasts till Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. In fact, what we're really hinting to is that the topic lasts most of Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. Hanochas Eruv Bekever. We're going to speak about the placing of an Eruv on a grave. Birur Protim B'shitas Rabbi Yehuda. The Ma'arvin Lekayin Bebeis HaKforos. We're going to be analyzing his approach, Rabbi Yehuda, who has this leniency that an Eruv can be made for a Kohen in a cemetery. As the Gemara unfolds, we will be using a marking to keep track of the give and take nature of the Sugya. That we call the Ma'akav, where you can see on the side under the Mivneh heading, the narrow section will be pointing upwards, and the that would represent a question, kushios, and with the narrow part facing downwards, that will represent a response. So our Gemara continues. Rebuta Omer Af Beis Akforos. That means you can even make an Eruv for a Kohen by placing it in a cemetery. In other words, the Kohen's 2,000 Amos would start from the cemetery and an additional 2,000 Amos from that point. Tana, the Tanaic source explains why this is a possibility. After all, in general, a Kohen has no business being in a cemetery. So the source says, Tana, Mipnei Sheyochol Lochutz V'Leilech B'Shido Tevu Migdal. Lochutz is a separation from a word like mechitzo or chatzitza, something that separates. Since the Kohen can access the cemetery through a shida tevo migdal, we'll call it a cart, a chariot, some type of enclosure, a large enclosure that's more than the size of a vessel of a kli, since it's more than 40 saw, which is a measure, a vessel that is more than 40 saw. And by the way, 40 saw we know is 3 cubic amos. So if you have a sense of what an amo is, which is basically half a meter, so you would know more or less what we're talking about. So something like a chariot would be certainly meet the standard of a shido tevo or migdal, so he can be in that. He's enclosed, he's encased in this type of vehicle, and that will prevent the kohen from becoming defiled. This, of course, you should know, just before we go any further, this is a major topic of discussion, and as we've mentioned in the past, when we are learning Gemara markings, daf yomi shiurim, we are not expressing practical halacha. So bearing that in mind, we're not suggesting anything of a halacha l'maisa nature, so any kohanim that are amongst you, amongst the listeners, should not use this as some type of final halacha, but it certainly does serve as the basis of a halachic analysis. The Gemara continues, Kosovar, this source we just read is of the opinion, and there's a controversy around this, Oyel Zoruk Shmei Oyel. Ohel Zoruk literally means a cast ohel is considered an ohel. So let's work backwards. An ohel in our discussion is something that serves as a separation. In other cases, an ohel is something that is viewed as an overshadowing. But an ohel also has the ability that to contain that which is within it and separate it from that which is outside of it. And Ohel Zoruk, in this case, since we're talking about a chariot that has these dimensions, more than 40 saw, it's called an Ohel, but it's Zoruk, it's also mobile. That, according to this approach, is considered an Ohel with the Chatzitza property. Ubitlukta Dahani Tanoi, and what we're saying, in fact, is the subject of the following Tanaic controversy. Desanyo Hanichna Seretzu Amen B'Shiuta V'Migdal, one who enters Eretz Amim. Eretz Amim is all the land outside of Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel is one category, and everything outside of Israel, there's a rabbinic tumah that's imposed on what we call chutz laretz. And being in chutz laretz, being outside of Eretz Israel, one encounters tumas meis midrabbanan. That being said, that Eretz Amim is the equivalent of the dead. So when one is in a chariot, let's say one leaves Eretz Yisrael while in a chariot, so Rebbe Mitame, Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yehuda Mitaher. So one who enters the two Eretz Amim, we call Tumas Eretz Amim, and a Shidotei V'Migdal, which we said are different types of what they, chariots or boxes or chests, they, according to Rebbe, too bad, it doesn't help. But according to Rabbi Yossi Biuda, it helps. What's the underlying machlokas here? Rebbe is of the opinion that a mobile ohel does not function as an ohel, therefore it doesn't serve as a chatzitza, an interposition in the face of the tumah. He becomes tumah. And Rabbi Yossi Biuda says it is effective. So if we saw in our Mishnah that an Eruv can be made for a Kohen in a Beis HaKvaros, that would be based on the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Now we raise a question. V'ha desanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, we continue at the top of Lamed Aleph. Ma'arvin l'Kohen Tor b'truma tahora b'kever. An Eruv can be made for a Kohen that's Tahor using Truma that's Tahor at a grave. Very, very perplexing source. Well, the question is, Hechi Ozil, how does he get there? What you would answer, Beshida Teva Umigdal. That's what you would answer. But the Hakevon the Achta Itmala, but is it not so that as soon as you place it down, the Truma on the grave, the Truma becomes Tome? And that being the case, he cannot eat it. Truma Tomeya must be burnt. Let's take a look at the Rashi at the top of the Omid. Marvin the Kohen Torah, but Truma Torah, but Kever. The Kol Shekein b'chulin, and certainly you'd be able to use chulin, because chulin b'inami mitamu chazulei. Chulin, the mundane food that becomes tameh, is something that a kohen is allowed to eat. And la'afilu b'truma, the chiddush of this source is, even truma di mitame lo chazulei, if it becomes tameh, it's not fit. Efshir l'meva takanto, kin meforsh vazo. There is a solution, nevertheless, for using truma Torah on the grave. As the Gemara explains, v'dafka noka tohor, Bitahora. The example here is very specific. It's very, as we say, very specific. Tohor means a kohen that's tohor. Using truma that's tohor. Avol b'tameya lo. Delo chazya lo l'kohen tomei v'lo l'kohen tohor. But truma that's tameya is not fit for a kohen that's tomei, unlike chulin, which is fit for a kohen that's tomei. And it's not the truma tameya is not fit for a kohen that's tohor either. The kohen tome b'tora nami lo the lo chazile, and using truma that's tor for a kohen that's tome also is not fit. Rashi continues hefi ozil b'shida tevu migdal. Well, how would he get to the grave in the case of the Truma Torah? He would get there using the shida tevu migdal method. The kevan de yachta mitamala. But once you place the truma down on the grave, which is where your kohen shvisa, where you're making your eruv, well, doesn't it become tamei? Klomar nihidul Rabbi Yehuda afilu beis hakvaros ika takanta lemezav shida tevu migdal. Granted, Rabbi Yehuda is lenient with regard to the issue of location because he has access using these vehicles. The kol shekein kever yechidi shiochol lamud etzlo, and certainly an isolated grave would be allowed as far as accessibility. But when the truma is placed down, doesn't it become tomei at the point that it is on the grave? It's tomei through overshadowing. So the Gemara answers, b'shelo huchshira o shenilo shebemei peros. The truma, when the truma, will talk about a loaf of bread made of truma grain. Well, it was it never became Hukshar Lekabel Tuma. It never encountered, let's say, a liquid that would metamed. But make it mukhsha, make it ready to make it available for becoming tummy. This, by the way, would not apply to a loaf, because obviously when you're making a loaf, you are using water, but it would apply to, let's say, other foodstuffs that you want to use as an eruv. Fruits, for example, that could be used as an eruv, but nevertheless, they never became wet, so they're not hukshar lekabel tuma, so placing it on the grave would not make it tummy. Or if it's a baked item, it was kneaded. Niloshim was kneaded with may peros, with fruit juices. Fruit juices, even though they are liquid, they are not machshir lekabel tuma, because hechshir lekabel tuma, to make something susceptible to becoming tomei, you need to use one of seven specific liquids, including things like wine and water and milk, but not fruit juices. Okay, that having been said, so far we see the possibility of the Kohen gaining access to the grave, and the Truma not becoming Tomei. But when we talk about access to the grave, still there's a question. The Heichi Maisi law, how does he bring it to him? How does the Kohen in the chariot bring the Eru food to him? The answer is Bipshute Kli Eitz, Delo Mekabli Tuma. He uses a flat wooden entity, a flat wooden vessel that is not Mekabel Tuma. So the question had been here that if the We didn't explain the question sufficiently well, but that is that if the Kohen is in the chariot, how does he get the food to himself? So, in other words, if he takes a bowl or a large spoon or something to take the truma from the grave, so the kli that he is holding will become an av hatuma, and that will metama the Kohen. So the Gemara answers, well, he uses a pshute kli eitz, uses a flat wooden article, being that it has no what's called base kibble, it has no receptacle. So the vessel being used to access the truma is not tummy, doesn't become tummy, and hence the kohen doesn't become tummy. There still is a question, though. The ha kol mahil, but is the kohen not overshadowing when he sticks his arm out over the grave, holding this flat wooden vessel, but is he not overshadowing? Let's be a little more accurate. Even if the Kohen's arm is not over the grave, but the flat board, it's true the vessel itself doesn't become tumei, but the flat board, let us assume right now that it has a certain amount of width to it. Whether it's a tefach wide or a third of a tefach, or it's a third of a tefach wide, but it has a certain a width to it, and that width will then be considered an oihel. The vessel is overshadowing the grave, and it's also at the other end you have the kohen holding it. So wouldn't there be tumas oihel affecting the kohen? The Gemara says no. The maisi law achorei. There's another girsa which you find in the Rashi, which I prefer over here. It's Achudei. The Resh is a Dalet, means that the flat wooden vessel is turned to its side, where it's basically just a very thin, narrow edge that's over the grave, and it lacks the tefach width that would ordinarily serve as an ohel atuma. So it doesn't have the what's called posech tefach, it doesn't have that tefach width to communicate the tuma. So if we just go over all of the points, we see Rabbi Yehuda and his description of the Kohen having access to the grave. So we're talking about truma that has not become mukhshar lekabel tuma, placed on a grave to which the Kohen has access to in a cart, in an enclosed chariot. When he gets to the grave, he sticks out a flat piece of wood turned on its edge, and thereby, let's say, jabs it into the truma that's on the grave, and everything in the meantime remains tohor. Well, ihachi my time of the Rabbanan. So then, why would the Rabbanan object to this? We see it's only Rabbi Yehuda that allows. The Gemara, you'll find at the lower part of the narrow lines, ihachi my time of the Rabbanan bekever yechidi. When you're dealing with an isolated grave, why would the Rabbanan not agree with Rabbi Yehuda? Granted, the Rabbanan disagrees with Rebuta when it comes to a large cemetery that involves going over a lot of graves. And the Rabbanan don't accept the idea of the mobile ohel as being a chotzeitz, being an effective interposition between graves and the Kohen. Here, when you're dealing with an isolated grave, the Kohen can stand next to the isolated grave, not overshadow it, not even need a shido tevo migdal, because he doesn't. It's not a cemetery. It's an isolated grave. The truma can be on the grave, as we already explained. Why did the Rabbanan object? Answer: Kosavri, they're of the opinion osur liknos bias bisure hano. One is not allowed to acquire literally a house, but in this case we're talking about his Shabbos location as represented by the Eruv. One is not allowed to have as your Shabbos location that which is forbidden to benefit from. In this case, the grave. A grave and all that is related to a corpse and the dead is something one is not allowed to benefit from. And Rashi cites the Gzeiros HaKosov Sham Sham from Egla Rufa and Miriam, which is in the Rashi. So it's also to benefit from Isurei Hanor. By definition, Isurei Hanor means something forbidden to benefit from, so you cannot establish your bias, your location on Isurei Hanor. Well, this raises a question. Michlal, the Rebbe Yehuda Sovar Mutter, are you suggesting that Rebbe Yehuda would say that it's allowed? So the Gemara answers, Kosovar Mitzvahs Lav Lehenes Nitnu. Rebbe Yehuda is of the opinion that when it comes to mitzvahs, performance of mitzvahs are not considered in the realm of benefit. The ikur chosum and asefer, the ikur, the main point is missing in the words, but Rashi fills it in, and that is that an eruv is made only for a dvar mitzvah, which would mean that your purpose in going 4,000 amas beyond the city, in other words, the basic 2,000 which you're allowed anyway, and the Eruv which extends it for another 2,000 is only under circumstances when you need to go to perform a mitzvah. So since the Eruv is connected with the mitzvah performance, it doesn't constitute something called hanaw, personal enjoyment, and therefore the kever is not a restriction. The Gemara continues with a question. Eloha the Omar Rava. That which Rava says, mitzvahs lav lehenis nitnu. Leimo ketanoi Omar lishmait say that mitzvahs are not the source of benefit, or are not given for benefit. It would seem that what Rava says is a machlokes tanoim, and that he conforms only to Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to the Rabbanan, it seems that mitzvahs come under the realm of benefit, and of personal benefit, personal enjoyment, and therefore you cannot use the grave. Omar loch Rava. So Rava will answer, and as this is the case throughout the Shas, an Amora almost all the time doesn't want to be the subject of a Tanaic controversy. In other words, when an Amora takes a position, he wants to assume that his position would be in accordance with all Tanoim. And so this constitutes a question when we say, should we therefore say that Rebbe Yehuda is a machlokes tanoim? Omar loch Rava, that means when should we say that Rava is a machlokes tanoim? Omar loch Rava, Rava responds, Isvira lahu, if the Rabbanan would hold the Ein Ma'arvin Elo L'dvar Mitzvah, that an Eruv is made only for mitzvah purposes, then the Kuli Alma mitzvahs lav lenas nitnu. Everyone would agree with that principle that mitzvahs are not the source of personal benefit. And everyone would agree that you could put the Eruv on a kever. V'hacha b'ha k'miflegi. But here, the Machlokis Rabbonon and Rabbi Yehuda is on the following point. Mor Savar, Rabbi Yehuda holds Eimar v'nevel l'dvar mitzvah. Then the Eruv is made only for dvar mitzvah. You see, he has a restriction in this area, but as a result of his restriction, there is a leniency that you can put the Eruv on the kever. Mor Savar, Mar v'nafilu dvar oshus. The Rabbonon hold that an Eruv, this is a point of leniency, that an Eruv can be made even for something that is a non-mitzvah trek, or trip, or destination. Even if it's for a non-mitzvah purpose that you want to extend your tchum, you can do that on Shabbos. But that results in the restriction of using a grave for an Eruv location. The Gemara asks, Elohal de Amar of Yosef. Well, what about Rav Yosef's din? Ein mar v'nelo dvar mitzvah lema ketanoi omer l'shmaitzei. Should, according to Rav Yosef, that Rav Yosef is an Amora, and he says that an Eruv is made only for mitzvah purposes, should we say that he is a Machlokes Tanoim, that he conforms only to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda? That, once again, as we said, would be an uncomfortable position. Omar Loch Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef now makes his presentation. Up till now, we had seen Rava's explanation to get out of what would be a machlokes tanoim. Now we'll see how Rav Yosef gets out of it. The kule almo ein marvin el dvar mitzvah. Let's make it clear that my halacha of ein marvin el dvar mitzvah is according to all tanoim, the rabbanan as well as Rabbi Yehuda. The kule almo mitzvahs lav lenis nitnu, which is what Rava had spoken about before. The concept of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitlu is something that everyone would agree with, and we wouldn't have to say that that is a machlokes tanoim. Ubeha komiflegi. The following is the point of machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. And by the way, you can see we have this double underline, which highlights how Rava sees the Machlokes Tanoim, and here how Rav Yosef sees the Machlokes Tanoim. So we say Ubeha komiflegi. Mor Savar, Rabbi Yehuda holds Kevan de Konole Eruv lo nichole de mintera. Once the Eruv is established, it kicks in, he doesn't care whether it's guarded anymore. In other words, if it goes to waste or it's eaten by an animal or whatever, at that point, at the entrance of Shabbos, as long as it took effect, he doesn't care anymore about it being watched. So he doesn't have benefit from the fact that it's being guarded, we'll say, by the grave. Or somar, the Rabbanon old Nichole the Mintero, the owner is still happy with the fact that it's Mintero, it's guarded, the Yitzdrich, if he should want or need it, Ochile, he'll be able to eat it. Let us take a look at Rashi, who fine-tunes this point. Rashi, toward the end of the Rashi commentary, came into Konole Eruv, Bein Hashmoshes, once the Eruv takes effect at the onset of Shabbos, at that twilight period of time, Sulo Ichbas Lebet Yerusa. He doesn't care about it being guarded or protected by the grave. The idea of being protected would be an issue of Hano'o. The Ad Knias Eruv, Inami Nichole Lav Hano'i, the Mishum Mitzvahu. And if you're going to ask about up till that point, until the Knias Eruv, he is happy with the Eruv being protected. Of course he's happy with it being protected, but that's not called a Hano'o, being that the Eruv is placed for a mitzvah. And we said already that mitzvahs lav lehenis nitnu, that mitzvahs don't fall under the category of personal benefit. So there still is no violation of benefiting from the kever. So just to the final point to explain the machlokas is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is a restriction. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no restriction. There's no problem of benefit because at the moment that the Eruv takes effect, he doesn't care that the grave is offering protection because he doesn't need it anymore. According to the Rabbanan, since the owner may very well be interested in eating it later on Shabbos, So he's interested in the grave offering it protection, and one is not allowed to benefit on a personal level from Isurei Hana, the grave. Therefore, the Rabbanan will say, don't place an Eruv at a grave. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.